Morning docket, I see council are set up in Humble Ventures versus City of Steamboat. Have you all had access to our written procedures? Does anyone have any questions? For members of the audience, if any of you has a cell phone or similar device, please turn it off so that the attorneys aren't interrupted during their argument. On that basis, we're ready to hear argument in Humble Ventures versus City of Steamboat.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Davy Yordi. I'm here this morning with Mr. Tom Lyons to represent appellant Cross Appellee, the City of Steamboat Springs. In 1999, the City of Steamboat Springs, in conjunction with several other nonprofit and government entities, was in the process of preserving thousands of acres outside of the City of Steamboat Springs for basically preserving it from development. Just one small piece of this puzzle is at issue here today, and that is Humble Ranch. The goal was for Humble Ranch to be preserved in its natural state in private hands, yet along with BLM land on one side and Colorado Department of Wildlife land on the north, to be open to public access for recreational use through a system of trails. These trails were to connect with Colorado Department of Wildlife and BLM land on the western and northern sides of the property. The city's easements are the Elk Lane easement and the Primitive Mountain easement. First issue on appeal today deals with the Primitive Mountain easement only. The main question is whether or not Humble Ranch can, through refusing to either build a community cabin at the westerly terminus of one segment of the easement, or and also by refusing to even allow the city to build this small cabin, essentially close the entire easement to public use for the foreseeable future, basically upon Humble Ranch's whim. Humble's only argument against the city's right to build the cabin itself is that basically the Primitive Mountain easement must be strictly construed to only give those cities those rights that are, in their words, specifically transferred in the instrument. However, Colorado case law no longer follows this specific rule of easement construction. Even Appley's own case, Lazy Dog Ranch, follows the third restatement of property for servitude, section 4.1, that basically says that's a thing of the past. When we're interpreting easements and deeds that create them now, we have to basically use a standard of reasonableness. Now, it's not exactly reasonable to say that the City of Steamboat Springs has the right to build trails, it has the right to build all of the things that would be necessary for the use of trails, but it does not have the right to build one small community cabin.
But isn't that what the easement says, though? I mean, there are specific grants to what the city can build, and the cabin isn't one of them.
The cabin is, it simply says, until such time as it is constructed. And the easement also, it doesn't say, there are a lot of specifics that aren't in the easement, such as, you know, protections on the trails against erosion, maybe small alcoves for people to stop and rest. It doesn't specify exactly what signs can be where. There are a lot of details that this easement simply leads up to the City of Steamboat Springs. There's really no reason to think that this cabin, which is necessary for the use of the easement itself, to not be one of those details.
And you'd call a 3,000 square foot cabin just a detail?
Well, yes.
Okay.
But also we have to look to the case law that we see. Lazy Dog Ranch talked about basically what development and construction people can do on easements. And the rule is that you can do anything that's reasonable and necessary for your use of the easement. The court must keep in mind that if Humble's interpretation of paragraph 8 prevails, which allows them to close segments 1, 2, and 3 to public use until the cabin is built, it is necessary for this cabin to be constructed for the City of Steamboat Springs to enjoy the easement at all. Therefore, when you apply Lazy Dog Ranch, it seems necessary for this cabin to be constructed and therefore reasonable for the city to be able to construct it. However, even if this court doesn't necessarily agree that the City of Steamboat Springs has a right from paragraph 8 of the Primitive Mountain easement to construct the cabin, there's also the consideration of whether or not Humble has a responsibility to either construct the cabin or allow the cabin to be constructed by the city. When you look to the facts of this dispute, this started when the city made plans to build the cabin itself and Humble sued to stop them. Now, there are several reasons why this would not be proper under prevailing Colorado law. First, this humble contends that the rules of contract interpretation, and specifically this court, the Supreme Court's, the restatement of contracts, and every court in the United States, as far as I can tell, prefers not to interpret contracts to create a conditioned precedent that is entirely within the control of a promising party. Humble has asserted again and again that this is a rule of contract and not deed interpretation, and therefore cannot be applied to this, but they've really cited no case law in support of that. And Colorado cases commonly apply contract doctrines to deed interpretation. Even their case, Lazy Dog Ranch, applies contract, you know, rules and basics to the interpretation of a deed. And there's absolutely no good reason not to imply that rule here. Well, what this means is that courts just prefer, it's a matter of reasonableness, not putting one party at the mercy of another. It's generally assumed that that's not something that people will contract for. Therefore, in order to create a condition precedent entirely within one party's control, we basically require very specific language. And that specific and exacting language is simply not present in paragraph 8. All paragraph 8 says, until such time as the community cabin is constructed. It doesn't say if Humble chooses to construct the community cabin. It just doesn't say that. The precise language is not there. So when we look to the Maine Electric, the Supreme Court case, or even to the dinnerware case from this court, we just cannot find a condition precedent entirely within Humble's control in this instance. Now, we also have to look to the primary rule of construction of deeds according to the restatement of property and contracts according to Colorado law. That is, you always construe an instrument to basically fulfill its express purpose. The Primid Mountain easement expresses its purpose in not one but two paragraphs. It's not just an intent that we have to look to in extrinsic documents to find. It's right there in the easement. All six sections of this easement are supposed to be open to public access. Therefore, it's...
Ms. Yorty, are you relying on what, paragraphs 1 and 3?
Yes.
Paragraph 1 is conditioned on as otherwise provided, so that seems pretty circular. Paragraph 3 has two purposes, doesn't it? And one is already fulfilled, and that is that you have the right to emergency access to the area.
Well, but there's really no need for emergency or city access if there aren't any people using the trails. Mostly that paragraph was about maintenance. If there's not going to be public access, there's no need to maintain or build trails. And also paragraph one.
Let me follow that up.
Yes.
I mean, if the other conditions are fulfilled, mm-hmm. can't the public get into this easement on through the CDOW land and through the BLM land and access segments 4, 5, and 6 of the trail system?
It's possible.
Okay.
Very roundabout.
If that occurred, wouldn't the city have an interest at least in emergency evacuation of the people on those parts of the trail?
It's possible.
Okay.
But I mean, that would require a significant traverse past BLM and Colorado Department of Wildlife land. So it's very unlikely that that will occur. It's also, I don't know if the city would even plan on constructing the trails if they couldn't have segments 1, 2, and 3. Of course, the city doesn't necessarily believe all 1, 2, and 3 have to be closed, but according to Humble's interpretation, that's what would happen. And when you look at the map, 1, 2, and 3 are what connect the Elk Lane easement to the Primitive Mountain easement and allow access through Humble to all sections of the easement. Now, but getting back to paragraph 1, it does say, you know, basically all 6 segments should be open, you know, subject to conditions herein. But according to Humble's interpretation, the conditions herein completely swallow that all 6 segments should be open to public use. That's not a reasonable interpretation. The conditions are supposed to be conditions of use, not conditions that make use impossible forever. That's sort of like interpreting a contract, you know, say in the beginning, you know, you can buy this car, but somewhere down in there it says, actually, no, you can't. That's usually not a reasonable contract, and that's not something we do. But these should remain our conditions. The community cabin must be built before we can use all segments of this easement. But those conditions shouldn't swallow the actual express purpose, which was for the public to have access to all 6 segments.
Since we're talking about purpose, let me ask you this. What is the purpose of the condition, which it is a condition, I think, concededly, that a cabin be built before public access be allowed? What's the purpose of that? Is it a safety concern? Is there any evidence in the record on that?
The record and the evidence would probably be best in the conservation easement. The conservation easement describes the cabin, and also in the deposition testimony of Susan Dorsey for the Yampa Valley Land Trust. The cabin was to be a public benefit. It's something they negotiated for when they were trying to preserve this property that they wanted for the public to have as part of their recreational use. So the cabin, its main purpose is to benefit the public and give them a community cabin as part of this trail.
But why is that tied to the opening of the trail? I'm still not clear. The purpose benefit the public, but why does it matter that the public benefited with a cabin before they can use the trail?
Well, it's the trail's use is conditioned on basically all the connections between BLM and Colorado Department of Wildlife Land being complete. That would be part of it. It was supposed to be right at the border of BLM and Humble Trails, and basically these trails were not supposed to open, it's pretty obvious from all the instruments, until the trail system was complete. The community cabin was always seen as part of that trail system. It was for the benefit of the public, and it was simply supposed to be there. When everything was there, all the easements and trails would open. So, moving on, we have to get to the last main general reason, or legal reason, why the city of Steamboat Springs should have the ability to either have this cabin constructed or construct it itself, and that is the duty of good faith and fair dealing. Even if this court doesn't believe even a single argument that the city of Steamboat Springs has made up to this point, the duty of good faith and fair dealing compels the city, compels Humble to at least allow the condition precedent within their control to occur. In reality, Humble has done exactly the opposite. They've filed suit to make sure that the condition, what they call a condition precedent within their control, never occurs. When you look at the restatement, when you look at Amoco Oil, when you look at the city of Golden B. Parker, the textbook application of the duty of good faith and fair dealing is when there is a condition precedent entirely within one party's control.
Was there any evidence presented below by Humble as to why they had, at least through the president, chosen not to build the cabin?
No, they simply say that it's completely at their discretion and they have no intent to do so.
Thank you.
So, therefore, the duty of good faith and fair dealing, in the very least, compels Humble to allow the cabin to be constructed, whether Humble constructs it itself or allows the city to construct it, as was the city's initial plan. There's simply no way that Humble can continue to just indefinitely thwart the city's ability to open all six segments of the primitive mountain easement to public use, as was the plan. There are no further questions. I would like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Your Honors, I'm Colin Deal on behalf of Humble Ventures. With me at council table is Ed Trousel, who's the owner of the Humble Ranch. And with me in the courtroom this morning is J.C. Rock, who was on the briefs in this matter. Humble filed this case, Your Honors, because there was a real dispute between Humble and the city over what this easement meant. When interpreting the easement, the court is supposed to look at the four corners of the documents and is also allowed to look at the circumstances surrounding its creation. And I think it's important for the court to understand a little bit of the context of how this easement came about. The city is correct that this was an effort to preserve a large parcel of property in Rout County outside of the city of Steamboat Springs. It's important that this property is located in the county. It's not located in the city. And Humble Ventures came to the table as the party that provided $3 million to purchase this private ranch and protect it from development. Before Humble came along, the Grant Ranch was slated to be developed into home sites, and the entire ranch was going to be developed. And Humble brought money to the table, figured out a way to preserve the majority of this ranch, and used 16 small home sites on the very outer edge of the ranch, the closest part to the county road, in order to fund the acquisition of the ranch, and then placed a conservation easement over the entire uplands portion, 1,100 plus acres of property, restricting development on that property in perpetuity forever. The only development allowed on the Humble Ranch on this upland portion today are two small cabin sites, actually one small cabin site and one sort of larger cabin. a 1,000-square-foot private cabin and a 3,200-square-foot community cabin. And that right to build those cabins is a right that was reserved and goes into the future forever. A future owner of Humble Ranch can build on those cabin sites. The baseline report, which is attached as Exhibit 7 to our amended complaint and is in the record and is something that the parties really haven't talked about yet in this case, kind of spells out the purpose behind why this conservation easement and why this property was acquired. And it was written in concert between the city and the Yampa Valley Land Trust. It states so on its face, and it says, Humble Ventures purchased the property in May 1999 to effectively protect the majority of the property from development and to continue to operate most of the property as a private ranch. One fact that seems to have gotten lost in all of the papers in this matter, I think, is critical, and that is Humble owns the deed to the Humble Ranch. It's undisputed that all the city has here is a trail easement, and the trail easement defines what it is. It's a 15-foot-wide easement on either side of a center line. It doesn't include any right to use the site that was reserved in the conservation easement for the community cabin. It is incredulous that the city is claiming that it can use Humble's private property to build a cabin when it has no real property interest in the cabin site. It's nowhere on the face of the easement. And consistent with hundreds of years of real property law, Humble, as the deed owner, has rights to do things with its private property. And one of those rights is to build the cabin when it chooses to build a cabin.
Mr. Deal, can you answer me a question I asked your opposing counsel? And that is, what is the purpose for conditioning the public use and the, that aspect of the easement, conditioning that on the building of the cabin? Why is that? Is there anything? Do you have any take on that?
I do, Your Honor. The easement, if you look at the easement as a whole, the purpose behind it was to allow public access across the Humble Ranch to access this cabin at such time as the cabin would be built. And if you think about it, that makes sense, because again, the conservation easement was forever. The only development rights on the conservation easement was to build this community cabin. And the community cabin, as it says in the conservation easement and is agreed to, is for the use of the public if it was ever built. And in order to provide access to that community cabin, a trail easement had to be included, and the trail easement provided access to the community cabin if the community cabin was ever built. But the conservation easement and the trail easement make it clear that it's Humble who controls the right to build that community cabin. Humble has the right under the conservation easement to license the community cabin. Humble gets to charge the public if the community cabin's ever built. It was a business enterprise that Humble was allowed to do under the terms of the conservation easement if Humble chose to do it.
Let me follow up on that if I can. You're saying the purpose of the easement is to access the cabin. Paragraph 3 says the purpose of the easement is to grant an easement on public trails, so it seems...
You're right. I mean, the purpose of the easement was multifold. It was to give the city, as you indicated earlier, you know, the right to use the Humble Ranch for maintenance and for emergency reasons. It was also to allow the public to use certain segments of trails on the Humble Ranch, subject to all those conditions that are set forth in the easement.
Independent of using the cabin, there's an interest in having public access to the trails, wasn't there, contemplated?
You know, the easement doesn't specify, and this was in the city's briefing, I mean, there's this argument that the public just got to go on to the Humble Ranch to use the Humble Ranch as a whole. That's not what the easement says. The easement talks about a trail easement, and each segment of trails was tied to the construction of some other trail. So in other words, segment 6 says you can't use segment 6 until there's a connecting trail that connects to Division of Wildlife property. Segment 5 says you can't use segment 5 until there's a trail that connects to Division of Wildlife property. Segment 4 says the same thing. You can't use that trail until there's a connector trail to the Bureau of Land Management. All of those conditional trails are outside of the city's control. They're all within the control of somebody else. And the city got the right to allow the public to cross Humble's property to use these trails if and when those conditions were met.
Could you address the good faith and fair dealing argument, particularly if there is no evidence in the record as to why Humble hasn't built the cabin?
I can address it, and let me...
Or address it later, if that's your preference.
No, I'm happy to answer. I'm happy to address it now. First of all, I'd point out to the court that we have not found a single case, and the plaintiffs haven't cited a single case, that has applied the duty of good faith and fair dealing to a real property interest like this easement. And I think there is a fundamental distinction between real property interests that are permanent interests that go on in perpetuity and a contract of the type they're talking about here. The rules of construction of real property say that you look at the absolute terms of the deed and you interpret it. And I think that's important because you have to understand that this deed is recorded in the county property records and it's going to be there 100 years from now. And to insert this duty of good faith and fair dealing into that deed, we haven't found a single case that's done it. That's point number one. Point number two is, in real property, although the rules of contract construction are used sometimes to interpret deeds and easements, there are also rules of real property that are applicable, like the rules against perpetuity, like the statute of frauds, that are specific to this type of a deed. And the court should look to those rules instead of the duty of good faith and fair dealing. And finally,
you said the court should look at other rules. I mean, what real property rule would trump the good faith argument?
Well, in this...
What specific rule?
In this specific case, you know, what they're talking about is that we have to build the community cabin within some time, unspecified, some reasonable time. And the rule against perpetuities talks about, you know, when an interest in real property like this, the interest to use a particular trail segment, is invalid because it violates the rule against perpetuities. It doesn't violate the rule against perpetuities in this case, I believe, but that would be the rule that the court could look at. But in addition, even if the duty of good faith and fair dealing applies here, and let's just say it does, the duty of good faith and fair dealing can't insert a provision into a contract that the contract doesn't already obtain. And here there's no indication that Humble ever promised to build a community cabin. So without that promise, if Humble had promised to build the community cabin, then perhaps the court could say that Humble had promised to build the community cabin within a reasonable time. But there's no promise in this easement by Humble to build a community cabin. It's not contained within the document. Therefore, the duty of good faith and fair dealing simply doesn't apply here.
But isn't that duty just another way of giving effect to the purpose of the contract? And the purpose of the contract, or one of the purposes in paragraph 3, is to provide public access. And under your position, public access might never be provided.
Well, I don't think that's true, Your Honor. There is public access to this property right now. Under the DOW easement, for example, the public uses the Agate Creek Trail. Public access is allowed on segment 6, right?
Not
now.
On 1, 2, and 3. It would be never allowed on 1, 2, and 3. Is that the...
Well,
except to the extent Humble chooses to build a cabin in its discretion.
Yeah, and never's a long time, Your Honor. Remember that the only development rights Humble has on this property are to build these two cabins. And so the only value that this property has to Humble and to the future owners of Humble is to build a community cabin on the property. The court can't assume that this community cabin is never going to be built because it is in the interest of Humble Ranch to build a community cabin at some time.
Explain to me why that's so and why Humble has not chosen to build it now. What value is the community cabin going to add to Humble's property? I'm just not clear on that.
Humble has the right under the conservation easement to rent it out and to make money off of it. Okay. As simple as that. And the reason Humble hasn't built the community cabin to date is because, you know, Humble hasn't had the means or the resources or the desire to do it. I mean, to order Humble Ranch to build something on its property at Humble's expense to insure it, to do all of the things that are associated with building a community cabin, Humble hasn't done it.
So why wouldn't Humble be happy if the city comes in and builds a cabin for them?
Humble Well, mainly for a lot of reasons, because of this particular dispute between the city and Humble Ranch. The city, and that takes me to the wildlife closure issue. I mean, the city, as you heard council say, told Humble that it was entitled to come onto its property and build a community cabin, and told Humble that it was going to ignore the provisions in the conservation easement that required it to cooperate with the Division of Wildlife. And as a result of that, Humble and the city aren't on real good terms.
Well, I mean, is that the only reason you wish to present why Humble wouldn't be happy to have the city build the cabin and therefore give it an opportunity to generate income?
No, I mean, Humble does, at this point in time, does not want the community cabin on the property.
Because?
Because, as I said earlier, Humble doesn't want to pay for the community cabin, doesn't believe it has an obligation to give the community cabin to the city. Under the terms of the conservation easement, there are a lot of obligations on Humble if the community cabin is built on its property. So for all of those reasons.
Are any of these issues that you're just raising and talking about, any of these reasons and so forth, are any of those part of the trial court record?
The reasons why Humble doesn't want to build the community cabin?
That stuff, all of these couple of questions you've been
I don't think they are, Your Honor.
Thank you.
To be honest.
And I guess it'd be hard to be, it's a summary judgment record, so I imagine a lot of these are not undisputed facts.
I think the reason for not building the community cabin is not an undisputed fact. That's right. I was trying to answer your question.
No, I appreciate it. I led you down that path.
Yeah. Let me talk briefly in the time I have remaining about the question that the court posed in the supplemental briefing about the wildlife closures. There is evidence in the record that Humble Ranch is critical elk winter and calving ground. It's contained in the baseline report that's Amendment 7 to the complaint. It's a document that was drafted in part by the City of Steamboat Springs, and it specifically states that one of the reasons the conservation easement was placed on this property was to protect critical winter range and calving grounds. That's undisputed. There's no evidence to the contrary. It's also undisputed that the Division of Wildlife closes its easements across the Humble Ranch due to elk winter and calving range. And it's also undisputed that the city.
Excuse me, you said it's undisputed, but the deposition of the Department of Wildlife representative said, as far as he was concerned, the city could allow trail access up to the wilderness area. So isn't that at least a disputed issue of fact between him and the gentleman from whom you got the affidavit?
Your Honor, I don't recall that specific testimony, but I believe what he was talking about is that they had a legal right to allow that in view of the Division of Wildlife's point of view, and I think that's right. The Division of Wildlife does not have the regulatory authority to tell the City of Steamboat Springs that it has to close the trails. It doesn't have that authority.
Does it even have the authority to ask the city to close the trails, to close its easements?
I suppose it could ask it as, you know, a neighbor asking someone else, but beyond that, no. I mean, the duty here arises from the easement document, and the duty arises from Humble Ventures contracting with the City of Steamboat Springs and requiring the City of Steamboat Springs to cooperate with these wildlife closures. And the Humble wanted the city to cooperate with these wildlife closures because Humble knew that the Division of Wildlife was the state's expert on when property needed to be closed for wildlife protection purposes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court, the city has very few arguments to make in rebuttal. The first, we'd like to clarify some of the record in context. First, the $3 million that he spoke about is actually not in the record on appeal, and it would be a contested fact. As far as the city remembers, Humble actually came to the table with no money, raised money through the pre-sales of residential lots, and then the Great Outdoors Colorado paid a substantial sum of money for the conservation easement. So that's actually what the city believes would be the correct context for this, for the issues today. Next is the purpose of the easement. The purpose of the easement was to provide public access to these trails when they were completed. There were certain conditions of access, but these conditions were never intended to swallow access. And even though Humble owns the deed to Humble Ranch, they own it subject to several conditions, the conservation easement, the trail easements, Colorado Department of Wildlife access easements. So they might own the deed, but that doesn't mean that they can simply get rid of the obligations that they undertook when they purchased the property. Now, next.
And what obligation did they undertake? The obligation was to build a cabin, to open the trail? What obligation are you saying they undertook, and where did they undertake it?
The city believes that the city has the right to build the cabin, and Humble has the obligation simply not to stand in their way.
That's reading rights and obligations that are not expressed. I mean, you're asking us to imply that right of the city, mm-hmm. and to imply an obligation on Humble that is not expressed in the easement.
But we also have the secondary argument. Humble could simply allow or give reasonable permission for the city to construct the cabin. It could work with the city to construct a cabin that both parties are happy with.
Where in the easement is there warrant to require them to do that? They certainly could. I don't disagree with that. But
I believe we'd have to look to Lazy Dog Ranch, where the city has the right to do improvements upon their easement necessary for its enjoyment of the easement. We have to look to the duty of good faith and fair dealing, where they can't stand in the way of a condition precedent that's solely within their control. And we have to just overall look to the interpreting this easement to be in conformance with its expressed intent, which is public access to all six segments.
Ms. Yordi, do you have any authority applying the duty of good faith and fair dealing to a real estate, a filed real estate document, such as a deed or an easement?
Actually, no case comes to mind, but this document, it might be a filed easement, but it's also a contract. It starts out with an exchange of consideration, and then it exchanges promises. There's no reason why it would be different. But that is actually the final point we want to make. An actual rule of deed interpretation is that it is interpreted differently when you have down-the-line owners of the easement. But we're still dealing with the two actual parties to the contract. We aren't dealing with whoever Humble passes the property onto. Therefore, it's the city's contention under Colorado law, and especially the restatement, that we interpret this more as a contract. The rules might change if this was somebody other than Humble who was actually a party to the original contract, but it's not. We're dealing with a contract between two parties. It happens to deal with real estate, but it was still a contract. So we'd like to thank the court for its time, and if they have nothing further, thank you.
One procedural matter. The parties, in response to our order, submitted supplemental briefs. The city's supplemental brief did not honor the 5-page limitation in the order, and on that basis it will be stricken. If the city wishes to submit a supplemental brief, it may do so up until Friday. Otherwise, the case stands submitted. Counsel are excused. We will issue a written opinion in due course, and counsel in our next case may set up when the tables are cleared. Thank you.